Hour number two of the show live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Bickley and Murata as we dive back into Cardinals training camp. And certainly you can text us your thoughts on Cardinals training camp. Just text them to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. And we're going to focus on the receiving core in this segment right here because it's going to look different. Still don't know what's up with Larry Fitzgerald, but you've got A.J. Green, you've got Rondale Moore. You're hoping for a breakout season from Christian Kirk. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't had that breakout season. What are you expecting from Kirk this year, Jarrett?
I don't know what to expect from him anymore.
This might be it if he doesn't have like a huge season somebody else. Like,
oh, for sure.
There's a scenario where Rondale Moore has just a monster rookie year and Christian Kirk's just kind of and then he's not here next year.
No, I think that's a very realistic scenario. He's in like the John Brown, you know, kind of area where he needs to take the next step or else you move on, because what Christian Kirk has given you, he's flashed. He's had some big games. He hasn't necessarily had great seasons, and he's dealt with injuries, inconsistencies. Like, he'll have a game where he catches three touchdowns, and then he'll have two straight games where he has two catches.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a weird start because his rookie year, 12 games, you know, it's fine, whatever. He's a rookie. Rookie receiver, 590 yards, three touchdowns. 2019, he had three touchdowns. And if I remember right, they all came in the same game against Tampa Bay. So that's not the sort of consistency you're looking for from a guy that, especially before he had DeAndre Hopkins, you were like, can this guy maybe be the number one receiver? Yeah, he had six catches for 138 yards and three touchdowns in that one game against Tampa. Last year, six touchdowns, but only 621 receiving yards. So, like, he's a number three receiver right now.
And how many catches did he have?
Last year, he had 48.
I mean, that's barely even a number three receiver in an offense that's supposed to be so potent.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it was going into last year or if it was Cliff's first year, but we were doing sort of like the predictions for the season kind of deal, and Vince predicted that Christian Kirk would lead the NFL in catches.
Oh, the NFL.
That was the expectations, that like he could have this breakout year in this offense with this quarterback, and he just really hasn't.
He still could, but this is probably, I guess the best way to put it is, if you're looking for a breakout season for Christian Kirk to hit another level. Not like he doesn't have value to you right now, but I mean, his contract's up after this year, so it's like he may end up having more value to somebody else if this is all he can give you. If you're looking for that breakout year, this is probably the last chance you're going to see it. Wouldn't you agree? Because like his first year, Kyler Murray wasn't even here. So just throw that year out. His second year was Kyler Murray's first year, so you can kind of, at least if you're looking for a breakout, you can say, okay, maybe it takes a season for the rookie quarterback to get on the same page with one of his potentially best receivers. But then last year, like you said, just 48 catches. It's like if there's going to be a breakout with the Cardinals for Christian Kirk, it's this year or that's it.
Okay, if there's going to be, it's going to be. Will there be?
I guess it depends how you define breakout, because statistically you're not going to have a monster year with DeAndre Hopkins gobbling up as many targets. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins had 160 targets last year.
I believe the Cardinals were a team that once had three 100-catch receivers, or yeah, three 1,000-yard receivers, I should say. So it's possible to have, you know, distribute the ball throughout.
Well, that's going to hinge on Kingsbury's offense being a little more efficient and productive, and it's going to hinge on Kyler Murray. If you're going to have even just Christian Kirk and go off with DeAndre Hopkins, it's going to require a monster season.
See,
from Kyler Murray.
The ideal scenario would have been when Larry Fitzgerald retires.
Yes,
Christian Kirk is the guy that steps up to be that number two guy if you have DeAndre Hopkins as your number one.
Yeah. Well, they asked Christian Kirk about Larry Fitzgerald yesterday, and you could tell, you know, the reporters are getting a little more clever with this. They asked me yesterday, hey, does Fitz still have a locker in the room?
I honestly haven't even checked. I just went and sat down in mine and made sure all my stuff was there still.
Smart answer. That's a savvy move right there.
Fitz? Who's Fitz?
What? Huh?
Eh? Locker room.
What are you talking about? They also asked him how competitive that wide receiver room is going to be this year, because behind DeAndre Hopkins, you got a lot of guys coming at the season from different directions.
There's never been one of those things, you know, especially in our room. It's never, you know, I got to beat this guy out, or, you know, he's coming for my spot, or I got to look for the fourth, fifth, third, second receiver spot. You know, it's never, I've never felt that type of tension or attitude amongst guys in our room. You know, we're honestly just trying to be the best group that we can be and be the best group in the NFL because, you know, we have the talent to do it, and that's always our mindset when we step on the field. So it's never, you know, like I said, you know, been one of those you know, kind of atmospheres.
Now, I did say it's obviously weird not having number 11 there.
You know, it definitely feels weird, you know, without him. You know, first time I've sat down in my locker, and he hasn't been next to me. So it's definitely a little bit of an adjustment period for me. But like you said, just he's been around here, a part of this organization for so long. You know, not having him, you know, here on the first day is a little weird.
You'd like to, I mean, you'd like to have Larry Fitzgerald there just in general. But now you look around and you're like, okay, this is a guy that was kind of a mentor for Christian Kirk, and not that Kirk necessarily needs it going into year four, but it wouldn't hurt. Certainly with Rondale Moore, I mean, I know they're different receivers, but they're still both receivers. You sort of hit on it right there, Jarrett, where it's ideally whenever Larry Fitzgerald retires, you have the next guys ready to step up, and not just, hey, we have DeAndre Hopkins and then some guys. You know
which,
what I mean?
By the way, the Cardinals have not been able to do throughout their history.
They haven't, but Houston
when
bailed
Kurt
them
Warner
out
retires,
with that Hopkins
Carson
trade.
Palmer retires, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about just that position. I'm talking about, like, finding the next guy to take over for the guys that are, you know, Robert Kimdichie didn't exactly replace Calais Campbell.
Not quite, no.
And, you know, Josh Rosen didn't replace Carson Palmer and so forth.
No, he did not.
John Skelton was not the next Kurt Warner, if you can believe such a thing.
It is, you know, you do, though, you get a reprieve because of that DeAndre Hopkins trade, where for the longest time it was like, when are the Cardinals going to draft their next number one receiver and let him develop behind Fitz, and then when Fitz retires, that guy will step in. Because Houston gave you their best weapon, and then ultimately gave you J.J. Watt, too, so they gave you their two best players.
And it's something they're experiencing right now at cornerback.
Yeah.
They never could find that corner opposite Patrick Peterson. So finally, when Patrick Peterson left, they didn't have someone to step right in.
No, they don't. They don't even have the corner opposite Patrick Peterson.
They don't have the co-cop.
It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, because you would assume AJ Green steps up and is just the number two guy.
I know.
Right?
You're assuming that based on what he's done in his career,
yes,
but not his recent career.
No,
and that's another situation. Well, that's it though. Like, do you base his lack of success recently on his injury problems? And if so, does that mean that you have trust that he'll stay healthy this year?
No, and I mean,
do you base it
on? He did play 16 games last year. It just didn't feel like it.
It sure did not. That's almost more discouraging.
Yeah. I still think he has something left, but he's got to be on the field. The year before, he only played 9, and 2016, he only played 10 games. I mean, there was a stretch there early, I don't know, what, the first 4 or 5 years of his career, he was one of the 3 or 4 best receivers in the NFL.
For sure. But don't you agree, though, in the ideal situation, that entering year 4 with the expectations that were on Christian Kirk and the excitement after they drafted him, that by this time he would be ready to step into that number 2? We're not even saying he needed to become the number 1, that he could step into the number 2.
I think there's... If you went back and talked to Keim when they drafted Christian Kirk, I think his ideal plan would have been like, you get to a year like this and you don't have to go out and sign AJ Green and draft Rondale Moore. Like, it's one or the other, right? Okay, you've got DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk is our clear number 2. Do we want to go out and get an AJ Green and have a really, really, you know, a lot of big names in our top 3? Or are we cool going out and drafting Rondale Moore in the second round? If Christian Kirk was where they had originally envisioned, and again, he hasn't been bad, but if he was where they originally envisioned him, you have to think maybe it would have been either or with AJ Green or Rondale Moore.
Right. But like, I mean, and like I said John Brown, Michael Floyd was another guy that, like, they drafted him to not be the heir apparent to Larry Fitzgerald, to at least develop into the strong number 2 when he was gone. That obviously didn't work out for a multitude of reasons. But they're in the situation where it seems like, okay, they didn't have enough at wide receiver last year. Whether that was because of the offense wasn't created enough to utilize everybody, or they just weren't good enough.
Yeah.
What they've essentially done is replace Larry Fitzgerald with A.J. Green,
mm-hmm.
which I think is kind of a lateral move. What do you think?
Yeah, because there are question marks around A.J. Green right now. And some of that, remember, he was with a rookie quarterback last year, too.
And essentially, what I vision it as is Rondell Moore is going to maybe take Andy Isabella's snaps.
If you're Rondell Moore, you probably want more than those, right? I mean, you're hoping to be on the field a little bit more than Andy Isabella.
I'm just trying to think, like, it didn't improve that much unless you could expect a better year from someone like Christian Kirk.
The receiver position, I would say, is one of the most confusing on the Cardinals. Maybe the most confusing. Because, like, you look in the secondary, you're like, okay, they still need help there. You look at the defensive front, you're like, that should be a huge strength. You look at the offensive line, you're like, maybe that could be one of the best in the NFL. You have a rough idea what you have in Kyler Murray, but at the receiver spot, you're right. Because, like, you didn't know if Fitz was coming back. You still don't. So you went out and get A.J. Green essentially to be, I think they're anticipating he'll be maybe even a little more productive than Fitz was, but then you might still have Fitz come back. You drafted Rondale Moore, and I don't think you're way off base with the thought of, like, maybe he's going to replace Andy Isabella, but you also want more than that.
I mean, he's a very similar kind of player.
But to use a second-round pick, you want more than that from him ultimately, right?
And yeah, but I mean, Andy Isabella was a second-round pick, and they didn't go out of their way to use him.
Don't bring that up again. Here, do you want a list of the receivers they've taken over, like, the last 10 years when we just start reading these off?
Yeah, as Gambo, though, or as yourself?
I'm going to get too sad as I read these. These are just guys they've drafted at the receiver position. So
Sad Gambo does sound like a good new character for the show.
I don't know if I can do a sad Gambo voice. There's too much energy involved. So Rondale Moore this year, nobody in last year's draft. 2019 was Isabella in the second. Hakeem Butler in the fourth. We're just going to take a trip down memory lane and see what these names do for you. Keyshawn Johnson in the sixth. Year before that was Christian Kirk in the second round. Year before that was Chad Williams in the third round. Then you got to go back to J.J. Nelson in the fifth. That was a nice pick in the fifth round. John Brown in the third. Walt Powell in the sixth round of that year's draft.
Big Walt Powell. I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, now we're starting to trail. But I mean, like you said, Michael Floyd in the 2012 draft. Not a lot of success with the receivers you've drafted. Now, John Brown's gone off and had a good career with Buffalo. Like I said, Christian Kirk's not bad, and it's obviously way too early to talk about Rondale Moore because he hasn't even played yet. But they've tried to address this position through the draft, and it has not worked.
The Michael Floyd thing is funny because Larry has played so long with the Cardinals,
yeah,
that was 9 years ago. They were already trying to draft. Obviously, at the time, it was a compliment to him,
yeah.
But it was also like, okay, he's going to be the guy to take over for Larry. Larry went on to play nine more years. And
not so much there with Michael Floyd. So we'll see one more here from Christian Kirk. As you would expect, focused more so on what he can do and not so much all of the receivers. There's a lot of them now around him.
You know, I'm just focused on being the best that I can be and just focused on, being healthy and, like I said, contributing to a successful season. You know, I know the team's goal is to shoot nothing less than make a playoff push. And, you know, we all, like I said before, we all know the opportunity at hand. So I'm just, focused on being the best that I can be.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's possible. It's possible they have the answer there. It's going to take Cliff Kingsbury pretty quickly figuring out how to fit those pieces together at the receiver position because you've got some names, you've got some up-and-coming players in Rondale Moore and the like, but you need to you gotta figure it out quickly with the expectations on this season. Okay, we're going to switch here to college football. Mainly because you piqued my interest, Jarrett, when you said we have usable Herm Edwards audio after the debacle yesterday when we tried to take the press conference live. Okay, let's start with just general expectations for ASU football this season. All right, most people have them picked third in the Pac-12 South. Jarrett, I know you have them first.
Oh, sure.
Potentially going to the
first
national
in the
title
Pac-12,
game.
First in my heart,
yeah, obviously. But as I said, as I've been saying now for, it feels like a couple years, this, when you have Jaden Daniels in year two, or now it's like year two and a half after what happened last year, this is your window to make like a legitimate mark, and go like 10-2 or something. And Herm was asked if anything less than the South title would be disappointing at this point.
Well, yeah, you say that, but I heard we were ranked third, so So what do you think about that?
But, no, it's fine. I mean, you know, that's what's great about sports. There's always rankings. I can remember when I first took this seat, 4 years ago. I think the same thing was kind of applied. You know, you guys are going to – and I get it. I've been on that side. I've been on you people's side before. I was in the media. And that's always hard. And I understand why some teams are ahead of us. Maybe some other teams should be ahead of us. I don't really know, how you draw the conclusion. But the two teams that obviously are up there, along with our whole conference, I think it's very competitive.
I feel like I'm going to be emotionally conflicted all season. Because Herm is like, he's the guy that when you go to cover a press conference and you get sent to cover Herm's press conference, you're like, right. Nice, okay, I'm gonna hear some stuff I'm not hearing anywhere else.
For example.
Yeah.
Not really where I was going with it, but still, I mean, you had it there, so I'll give you that. But then all this stuff happens this offseason, now they're being investigated, and you're like, how could Herm let this happen? At least tell me Herm's Herm. Not involved.
Come on, Herm.
Yeah, say it ain't so, Herm.
Say it ain't so. Well,
but then Herm talks, I'm going to be like, Herm's not involved.
From the soundbite you played, all those a lot of coaches would be like, we don't pay attention to the preseason rankings. In fact, they'd pretend like, I didn't even see those preseason rankings.
Yeah, preseason rankings, what are those?
In fact, the opposite. He's calling them out like, they picked us third.
Yeah.
Third.
Yeah. Like sitting there reading it.
But that is a good point, though, that you brought up because, like, when the U of A basketball investigation was going on,
yeah,
and then you heard Sean Miller talk, he's like, "Hey, you're doing all right, okay." You're like, "Yeah, he's guilty."
Yes.
I believe that. Yeah, sure.
And especially like from your perspective as a huge U of A basketball fan, I never really got the impression from you, Jarrett, that you were a huge Sean Miller fan necessarily.
No, I always thought I thought he was a great recruiter, and we know why now. And that's what was so disgusting about it, because like he always underachieved with the talent he had, and it was not a good in-game coach.
Yeah.
So the one thing he was great at, you found out that he was cheating to do.
And
so
now,
what the hell was the point of keeping him then after that?
I don't know why they kept him for so long after that. But at least in that situation, you could be like, look, we'll get another coach. We'll be fine. I don't like Sean Miller that much anyway. And then they dragged it on for like 2 years. With Herm, it's like, nah, come on, Herm. This was somebody else. It wasn't Herm.
Well, it was somebody else, according to
the investigation.
But it's the same kind of deal about like the head coach.
Yeah, you got to be aware of what's going on. They did ask him about the investigation. He said, "I can't comment on it." They asked him if it's going to be a distraction this season, and he responded with this:
"Well, for us, it hasn't been a distraction at all, to be quite honest. If you watch our players work and our coaching staff, we're excited about getting back in the building tomorrow. They're there today, but I'm going to be back in the building tomorrow and really going forward on starting camp on the 4th of August. I heard the local guys now, you guys will actually hopefully get to attend practice and kind of see what it looks like. So we're a focused football team, and I think it has a lot to do with the players that decided to come back in the spring. I mean, that's kind of where our mindset is right now, as far as I know, as far as what I see and feel by the players.
The one thing I would say about the players, because we kind of got into this a little bit briefly yesterday, and you just try and put yourself in a player's spot, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to do everything I can to win the Pac-12 South, and maybe the Pac-12, and who knows? You know, if you go on this run with the defense they should have, and Jaden Daniels, and I mean, the running game last year when it got to play, although some of that was in the Territorial Cup, and so I think that was skewed. The running game looked dynamic.
Territorial Cup.
Who was that?
That was Herm.
Oh, it was Herm. It didn't sound like Herm. So you have these pieces in place, and as a player, like, is it in the back of your mind of if we have this amazing season, it might get all retroactively taken away in 4 years? But the reason that I can buy into it not impacting the players so much is if they have an amazing season, even if it gets taken away in a few years, they will go to the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, there's plenty to play for right now in the moment as a college football player on a team with high expectations. So I don't think it'll be a distraction so much for them. But, I mean, as a coach, don't you got to be like, hey, I'm not going to the NFL. So hopefully we win and nothing gets turned up in the investigation.
Yeah, first of all, these investigations tend to drag out so long. Like we just said with Sean Miller, the results and him being fired didn't happen until 4 years after.
Yeah, that's a good point. Jaden Daniels will be coaching in the NFL before we get a result on this, probably.
Well, I mean, seriously, with Sean Miller, it was stemming from DeAndre Ayton, who, by the way, just played in the NBA Finals as a third-year player in the NBA for the Suns.
And so. He looks great now that he's getting real coaching. So there you go. It just proves your point, Jarrett.
Yes.
He finally took off in the playoffs.
I mean, do you think it's going to be a distraction? It feels like... it's tough because you can, you know, if they were like Alabama and you're saying like they're just so overwhelmed with talent and history and tradition and they know... you know, they've been there before, they've done that before.
Yeah.
That, of course, it's not going to be a distraction. But ASU is sort of hovering in the middle, where it's like they have enough talent to maybe do something special this year, but they also haven't done it before, and they kind of underachieved last year.
Well, so maybe play last year.
Yeah, but even in the games they played, it's not like they went 5-0 or whatever, 4-0 in the games they played.
I mean, that first game against USC that they should have won and let it slip away in the closing seconds, and it was just ridiculous. It doesn't really matter now because, you know what, maybe that starts them on a crazy run and they go 4-0. But they have – this has to be one of their best collections of talent in the last 10 years, top to bottom. I mean, the defense should be really, really good. And you've got Jaden Daniels, who has the potential – is the potential, at least, to be the most dynamic quarterback in the conference. Now, whether he does it or not, it's tough to tell because he only played 4 games last year. But you have the pieces to have a really, really impressive season this year. Where I think it's going to be a distraction, I guess, isn't the right word, but it's going to be, I don't know how it can't be a factor when you're recruiting. I mean, as an incoming recruit, are you going to be like, I don't know what's going on there. And if you're really good, it's like, I'm going to choose between Herm and ASU or Ohio State or whatever. Not to say Ohio State's squeaky clean, but they're not in any trouble right now. So as a recruit, you're probably like, okay, maybe I'll just go there because you're looking at an elite school going up against Herm and his, you know, his ability to recruit with his personality and just what ASU's been building. If you're that high of a recruit, I you're going to have a hard time as ASU getting those guys.
Well, their first game is essentially in a month, so.
Yeah, that's college football's like right there. All right, coming up, we're going to talk a little basketball, talk Phoenix Suns. We've already discussed this week, you know, what's the biggest priority? Yeah, that is Chris Paul. And beyond that, you know, what's the next biggest thing this team needs to do? And we talked about how that was probably a big man. How much emphasis do you put on bringing this same team back if you can, or at least as close to the same team back? Or do you need to make an addition? That's next. It's the Bickley and Murata Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Yeah, you heard it there in the update. Robert Sarver going to be on with Burns and Gambo today at 3:00. So,
in studio, 3 to 3:45.
Oh, he's doing 3 segments. I knew it was at least 2. So, you're going to get.
Don't want to miss that.
You're going to get pretty much everything you want to know about the state of the Phoenix Suns heading into this offseason. We're going to talk about it a little bit right now, though. And as I said, going into the break, we've kind of discussed. Each day this week, stuff that is facing the Suns this offseason. And tomorrow, obviously, we'll talk about the draft.
Because tomorrow biggest is the draft. Offseason in team history.
Did you just voice that yourself?
Yeah. No, you know how, like, it and rightfully so, it's been labeled as that for some of the local teams recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny coming off of an NBA Finals appearance, but this is as big an offseason as they've had. And it's not because they need to rebuild their team or because they need to take the next step. It's because they have to figure out a way to maintain what they have. And that's not necessarily, as we're about to talk about, just bringing everybody back.
But if you bring back Chris Paul, don't you think that takes a lot of pressure off this offseason? Like that, I hear what you're saying. Like there's a lot of pressure this offseason because you're trying to get back to the NBA Finals next year and win it, right? You want to build off the good that you built this season. But if you bring back Chris, that's 90% of it.
Not that they care about this stuff, but there is something to you proving to everybody that this wasn't a fluke season.
So what do you
one, because they totally came out of nowhere to finish number 2 in the NBA, and 2, because all the other teams had injuries leading to the finals in the playoffs.
What do you think, like what do you need to see from them next season to prove to everybody it wasn't?
No, I mean, if they're a top 4 team again, throughout the regular season, yeah.
Because, I mean, they were number 2 all this season, and people still found ways to poke holes in their playoff run. So, like, to me, is it a bigger deal that they are a playoff team that wins two rounds again next year? I mean, that's a lot to ask. They're capable of doing it, but it's a lot to ask.
Well, I mean, see, if they're a title contender next year, and sometimes that's just watching them and knowing, and that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, they could lose in the second or semifinals or finals of the conference, and you'd still say, like, okay, that they were title contenders. They just didn't get to the title.
But as we've seen, a lot of people nationally don't watch them during the regular season, or at least weren't last year.
The funny thing was, like, so the regular season, a lot of people wrote off because they're like, okay, well, that's fine. But, you know, once it comes to the playoffs and the Lakers are healthy and the Clippers are healthy and the Brooklyn Nets are healthy,
yeah,
then the real season's going to begin and you'll see what happens to the Suns.
Hmm.
Well, those teams never got healthy and never won, and the Suns kept winning. So.
Yeah. There you go. So now you look at their roster and just contractually what they have locked up already for next year. So look, you know you're going to have Booker, Ayton, Crowder, Saric, but he's not going to be playing for a while. Bridges, Jalen Smith, Cameron Johnson, Javon Carter are all signed for next year. Chris Paul, it sounds like a deal is going to get done.
We read his tweet yesterday, back to work,
mm-hmm.
thanking the people of Phoenix.
That would be a weird tweet to send and then go somewhere else. And also, it doesn't make sense for him to go anywhere else right now.
It doesn't financially. And it doesn't competitively.
Mm-mm. And the only argument you could make, and you brought this up yesterday, the only one you could make is like, yeah, but okay, but his best friend is in L.A. or one of his best friends is in L.A. and his family's there and the Lakers give him a chance to win. But that was all true when he picked Phoenix in the first place.
Yeah, and that he hasn't, you know, his entire career he hasn't played with LeBron James.
No.
Or Carmelo or Dwayne Wade.
No.
None of those. The only ones that have played together are LeBron and Dwayne Wade, and that didn't work out the second time around.
Carmelo, like, of those four, I mean, Carmelo was a really, really good player. He dropped off so much faster than the rest of them.
I disagree, because he's still in the NBA on a playoff team. Dwayne Wade's been retired for 2 years.
Yeah, but Dwayne Wade was pretty great for almost his entire career, except maybe, like, the last, what, year and a half? Whereas, like, LeBron's obviously still great. Chris Paul's obviously still great.
Right.
And Dwayne Wade's got titles. Carmelo went to New York.
How about comparing Chris Paul to Deron Williams, who was the point guard picked right before him in that same draft, and who,
yeah,
for the first few years of their career, it was a legit debate about who was better.
Yeah.
And he's outlasted them so long that I can't even remember the last time Deron Williams played. Years ago at this point.
It has. It's been a while.
And
yeah.
Chris Paul is still really good. But yeah, see, that's why... Even if you bring back Chris Paul, that's why the number one thing after that to me is campaign.
Yeah, it has to be.
But can you afford to pay him what he might get on the open market to be your backup point guard?
I honestly believe that's out of your hands at this point, don't you think?
But think of the increased importance of a backup point guard next year, especially after a second shortened offseason
mm-hmm.
and an extended playoff run. They might finally go to the load management route with Chris Paul. And if they do that, even if it's like 10 games off,
mm-hmm.
those are 10 huge games for your backup point guard.
Yeah. I'm assuming that some of the injuries that Chris Paul had in the playoffs, he wouldn't be playing through in November. I'd kind of hope so, honestly, with what this team's trying to accomplish next year. Look, you're talking to the guy that was ripping his hair out when they didn't take Tyrese Halliburton in the draft last year.
Is that what happened to your hair?
Yeah.
Is that why it looks like?
No, that's just because I didn't comb it. And look, everybody on the show was that way that night. So the fact that Cameron Payne emerged into the player he did, I mean, you could make a case that Cameron Payne's your point guard of the future, but are you willing to pay for that now? And has Cameron Payne showed you enough? Yeah, I mean,
I wonder,
after the first round against the Lakers, yeah. After the finals,
It's a situation where I normally would be like, well, yeah, but he played for the Suns and, you know, other teams and the national media doesn't really pay attention to the Suns. So does the rest of the league actually realize how valuable campaign is?
That's a good point.
Except
they played in the finals.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of his great games were in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And he was one of the, especially the first half of the playoffs.
And in both L.A. series, too, in particular, against L.A.'s.
Yeah, he really had those standout games and moments. So, yeah, it's going to be very, that's a really tough one.
Yeah.
because, you know, we all like Javon Carter and Etuan Moore and stuff. I would not feel comfortable with that as your backup point guard situation.
Well, you're not going to be able to go draft one tonight. You know, last year they were in that spot where it's like, hey, this team's going to be pretty good next season, but they also still have a relatively high pick, and then Halliburton dropped and other players too. But now it's like you're not going to get your – probably not going to get your point guard of the future at pick 29 tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All right, when we come back, we'll talk to Darren Urban, get his thoughts on what to expect from the Cardinals this season. That is next. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin, in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.
FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Bickley and Murata here on this Wednesday almost afternoon. And, of course, Cardinals training camp heating up. There's really nobody better to catch up with than Cardinals insider Darren Urban, who joins us now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Darren, thanks for the time. I know it's busy this point of the year, everything getting started up. How you doing?
I'm doing good, and I appreciate such a nice introduction. That was very nice.
Yeah, let's see. Did you hear that, Jared? I gave somebody a nice introduction.
I'm glad you did something nice in your life.
See, that's it. Now I can go back to being mean. Darren, I'm sure you're sick of talking about the Chandler Jones stuff, but in terms of what you saw or heard yesterday and just kind of your insight on this in general, do you think that's maybe the last we've heard of it for a while, or do you think it's going to keep getting brought up?
Well, I mean, inevitably, it's one of those things that if you're going to say, is it going to be brought up? I mean, are people going to ask about it? Are there going to be national writers that come through and bring it up? That's always possible until something is settled one way or the other. But ultimately, I don't think it's going to be something lingering. You know, as Cliff Kingsbury said, you know, Chandler's here. I haven't had a chance to talk to Chandler, so I don't know if he's jovial like Cliff Kingsbury called him, but I do know that he's taking part in stuff. I don't expect him to have any kind of hold in as some of these players are being talked about possibly doing across the league. We'll see. I think ultimately, guys, with Chandler, you know, I know he wants the new deal. I understand where he's coming from, and I don't blame him for any of this, including if he indeed at one point asked for a trade. But I also understand, and I think we all understand, that, you know, you're coming off a major injury and you're on the other side of 30, it's going to be tough to get a new deal before you get back on the field and kind of show where you were. It just doesn't happen in this league very often, and that's just the reality of what's going on right now.
Well, at least he hasn't used the phrase beautiful mystery at all in any of his press conferences regarding his future. Well, if you put that aside, then the Chandler Jones situation, what to you is the biggest storyline to watch for in, let's just go with the Cardinals camp?
You know, I think in the end it's going to be, well, I think there's two of them. I think one, unfortunately, is going to be one which is going to be greater around the league, which is, you know, I think we all want to believe the COVID stuff is kind of off to the side, but as we see with all these other sports and what's kind of going on, you know, how does this league deal with that going forward, knowing that we have all these things about the vaccines and some players don't want to do it, and where's the Delta variant and what's going on in the country? I think that's going to be something to watch, and obviously that's going to impact the NFL. If you're talking about the Cardinals as a team, I think it still comes down to Kyler Murray. You know, he's had two very good seasons in his 2 years in the NFL, but I think he needs to get to another level if this team really wants to make the push that it wants to. And I think how that develops and how he kind of works with the skill guys that they brought in and where this offense is and what Rodney Hudson means to the offensive line, I think that's what you really keep your eye on as we go forward.
Talking to Darren Urban, Cardinals insider. Darren, the secondary, I mean, you take a hit without Patrick Peterson. I know he wasn't the same guy last year, really the last couple of years. You add Malcolm Butler, but, I mean, there's some question marks back there, and it seems like this defense is almost built around just get to the quarterback so quickly that they can't throw and maybe exploit your secondary. What do you see as the best-case scenario with this with the secondary group?
Well, if you're talking about cornerbacks, I mean, I think when you talk about secondary, I mean, I like what they have at safety. I think they've got some depth there. Buda Baker's obviously an excellent player. I do think he needs to stay healthy, but I think Jalen Thompson has a chance to be a solid player. So safety-wise, I think they're okay. At cornerback, I understand, you know, where everybody's coming from, and I don't think that that's an unfair question there. I think best case scenario is Malcolm Butler is a solid, probably number one for you. You know, he may not be a superstar, but he can hold his own in whatever the scheme is you decide to put out there. Byron Murphy continues to level up a little bit as he gets into his career. And somehow Robert Alford stays healthy and is able to give you at least some solid cornerback play. I think to me that's best case scenario right now. I'm not really counting on the two day three rookies yet, but that would be the best case scenario to me as they're kind of put together at the moment.
You look at the receivers, I'm not going to ask you to predict what Larry Fitzgerald's doing, but behind DeAndre Hopkins, do they need a clear number two? In your mind, is it better if it's A.J. Green or Christian Kirk, or is that maybe not necessarily something that's necessary in this offense? They just need guys to step up and be consistent.
Yeah, I think for me, when you're talking about the wide receivers, you just need a situation where other guys can hurt the opposition if they decide to go all in on worrying about DeAndre Hopkins, and or other teams have to look at other players and DeAndre Hopkins can get more open opportunities. And I think that's what you're looking for. I don't know what AJ Green has left. I think it's fair to wonder what he has left, but I know he's going to obviously give it a shot. And I am very curious to see, with no Larry Fitzgerald around, as it seems, I'm curious to see what Christian Kirk can do in the slot. I do think he will get a lot more work there than anywhere else. And does that kind of change how his production goes? I'm very interested in that. And then, of course, you throw in Rondale Moore, who they've been very high at what they've seen out of him so far. You know, nothing that's counted and nothing in pads, but certainly they're optimistic that he can make an impact on this team. And I do think they're in a better place skill position-wise than maybe they were last year.
Speaking of skill positions, at running back, do you see James Conner and Chase Edmonds splitting carries? Because one thing we really haven't seen in the Cliff Kingsbury offense is running backs splitting carries. It's been mostly a feature back with just maybe two or three carries for the second person.
I think that's hard to tell a little bit right now. I kind of want to see how this develops. You know, Cliff Kingsbury's always talked about, go with a hot hand, go with a hot hand. But you're right, Jared. I mean, ultimately, Cliff Kingsbury always seems like the kind of coach that wants to ride one running back and the other guy is kind of a fill-in. And I think it could be a little bit different this year because of the makeup of how that would be. I mean, Chase Edmonds is going to be your starter. I think he's going to get the most touches. Now, whether he gets more carries than James Conner, I think, is a whole different thing, because I think James Conner could get a lot of the inside short yardage runs or maybe down on the goal line. But I think ultimately Chase Edmonds gets more touches because he can catch the ball. And even he was talking about, you know, whether it's, you know, 10 carries and 6 catches or, you know, 8 carries and 9 catches, whatever it might be, it's about touches for him and not necessarily carries. And so I don't think people should get too far over their skis when they talk about Chase Edmonds as a running back one and then still say, you know, is he going to negate 18 to 20 carries a game? I don't even think Chase is expecting that, but the touches is what's ultimately going to show what his worth is in this offense.
Darren, where do you come out on the pressure surrounding this team going into this season in terms of winning right now? Because obviously Steve Keim went out and got some big names, and you add Rodney Hudson, who's maybe not as big of a household name, but is probably the best addition you made this offseason. You already had talent, and yet you're still in the NFC West. It's not like the teams around you got worse.
I've kind of approached this every time I've been asked about this the same way, which is I think there's nuance there. You know, and usually it's framed a little bit differently, so I appreciate it, Luke, that you didn't go there. But, like, does Cliff Kingsbury have to make the playoffs to not get fired or whatever it might be? And I think ultimately it's going to be how this season plays out. I mean, if they start 6-3 and then they fade down the stretch like they did last year, it's going to be a difficult road to hoe in terms of what they want to do going forward. I mean, if they play 500 football, but one or two key players like your quarterback is hurt for half the season. I mean, I don't know how you lay that at the feet of, you know, a coach or a coaching staff. So I think it's going to depend on how they play and what kind of games they're in and what kind of progress they make. But I do know that they're disappointed. Again, Chase Edmonds mentioned it yesterday. He said they basically folded last year at the end of the season. And I think there was a lot of disappointment after they won the Bills game. I think everybody kind of assumed they'd at least get into the postseason, and when they didn't, I think it was a real gut punch. And I think a lot of these guys that were here last year, they're gonna carry that in their head going into this season.
Darren Urban, you can read his stuff on ArizonaCardinals.com. He's got a great two-part piece up there talking about the top questions heading into training camp. And Darren, it's always great to catch up with you. Good stuff as always, and enjoy camp. All right.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks a lot. That's Darren Urban checking in there. And yeah, there is a lot of nuance with this team this season, and it's tough to be in the NFC West, especially because it was tough to be in the NFC West last year, and then every team actively went out and got better. Like, there were times this past offseason, and it seems it's been a few months now, and with the Suns run, it feels like it was a couple years ago. But there were times in the offseason where it just felt like only the 49ers, Seahawks, Cardinals, and Rams were going after big-name players to sort of ramp up the arms race in the NFC West. And it's going to make for a stressful season, but it's going to make for a potentially really fun season as well. Jarrett brought up the running back position and just how that is going to impact the offense in general. We'll get more into that next. It's the Bickley and Murata Show. Luke Lipinski, Jarrett Carlin in for Bickley and Murata on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.